Hi, this is Megan McHugh, and this is the podcast of Triple R Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy, and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia, every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast, and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.
G'day, and thanks to Ethan from Banksia, and welcome aboard the Starship Zero G Science Fiction, Fantasy, and Historical Radio for episode number 1578, entitled Whiskers of the Heart. And I just know I'm going to get myself in trouble with that title for reasons. Our podcast title is The Pod Returns. I'm Rob Jan.
And Megan McHugh.
And we would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land of the Wurundjeri on which we gather today and broadcast from and to this Labor Day.
Yes, yeah. Public holiday.
We'd also like to pay our respects to the elders past, present and future. And speaking of the future, there are a few things dropping on streaming or premiering on the big screen at the cinema in March we thought we'd call your attention to. Mm-hmm. Netflix, season two of the remarkable live-action series One Piece is coming out on March the 10th. I love the first season of that. Can't wait to sail again with not a crew.
And they could be going for many, many seasons, given the source material's got like thousands of episodes. Yeah. So, yeah, if that good old ship can keep sailing on.
Sailing for the Grand Line. Disney Plus has season two of Marvel's Daredevil Born Again on March the 24th. Mm-hmm. I cannot wait to see how the multiple heroes that are now in play in the show, including old faves from the earlier Netflix Marvel shows, throw down against the villainous regime of New York Mayor Wilson Fisk and his partner in crime, Vanessa. Mm. And on Prime Video, not to be confused with the 1985 movie Young Sherlock Holmes, is Matthew Parkhill, Peter Harness's and Guy Ritchie's BBC TV series Young Sherlock.
Yes, very intrigued that that one's popped up. And, yeah, Ritchie's returning to do something else with the Holmes kind of property.
Because, of course, he did the two Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law Sherlock Holmes films. Mm-hmm. Hero finds Tiffin plays the title role. Mm-hmm. Tom Riddle in Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, he was.
Ah, interesting.
Because, of course, he resembled Snape, being one of the
Fines. Yeah, being a Fines.
In fact, his maternal actors are, sorry, uncles are actors, Ralph Fiennes and Joseph. And Joseph does play the father of Sherlock, Mycroft and Beatrice Holmes. Not Enola, Beatrice Holmes in this one. There's another actress in this called Zine Seng, who is a Taiwanese actress, and she is going to play a young Chinese princess, a scholar and martial artist, because of course. But we've seen her before in the Netflix series Three Body Problem. This looks like it's going to be fun. Mm-hmm. I also see that Colin Firth has a role in it too.
Oh, great.
Donald Finn plays James Moriarty. Mm. So you got that whole vibe of meet them at school, you know.
Yeah, the old kind of private school, British hijinks, sort of bringing that into the Sherlock Holmes. I mean, I think if they pull it off, it could be a lot of fun. Mm.
Speaking of revivals, there's a podcast called Once We Were Spacemen.
Yes. Have you been seeing these teasers?
Once We Were Spacemen is Nathan Fillion and Alan Tudyk's show on the podcast. They're both still employed in the acting roles. I think The Rookie's still running and Resident Alien certainly
I
still
love
is.
The Rookie.
And there's lots of crossovers in The Rookie with Firefly and Serenity. And we've been watching them on social media.
Yes. Mm. So you've been up to date with, they've been dropping some little breadcrumbs with Nathan Fillion popping by the front door to knock on the front doors of some castmates past. Mm.
And they all sort of react to it like, is it time?
Oh, it's time.
Oh, it's time.
What's your theory on what that might be sort of a teaser for? Because the news is dropping in a couple of days. They're sort of teasing, you know, news coming on March 14th or something like that.
Yeah.
So there's been a lot of fan speculation. What do you think?
Look, I mean, they've sort of said that it's not just a convention reunion.
Yes.
Or some kind of, you know, I mean, what could they do?
Well, I mean, a lot of people are hoping for a reboot.
Yeah.
The first couple of, you know, they visit a few of the cast members and I was like, okay, it's probably just going to be like a table read for charity or something, you know, something fun, not too big. But then sort of as they drew it out more and then visited almost everyone so far, I was like, okay, they're really making a bigger deal of this. I don't think they would drop that it's just like a table read of the first episode or something. It's got to be something maybe slightly bigger.
Is there wishful thinking, of course?
I don't think it will be a reboot, maybe
an animated series
that could work.
Yeah,
that could be fun. Because I mean, the reality is we're several decades out from when Firefly first screened. Mm-hmm. It's sad, only one season. But you know, if you were to try to reboot that now, not even to mention plot wise, some of the threads you'd have to weave.
Mm.
I think animated could be a good way to do it.
Yeah. And of course, Alan Tudyk's character Wash got killed in the Serenity movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're far enough away we can spoil that. But yeah, I mean,
no, too soon.
He's involved in the podcast already, so it's sort of like, you know, if it was something he's not involved in, it wouldn't be as off. So I'm not sure what it will be.
And Ron Glass, who played Shepherd Book, is no longer alive. Yeah. So you know, there's some things they'd have to work around.
I wonder what they would do. And, yeah, of course, everyone's older.
Hmm.
So we'll know by next week's show, won't we?
Yeah.
The news will have dropped.
Are they going to take the Sky away from us again? Oh, dear.
Don't break my heart again, yeah. I tell you.
But in the meantime, check out the Once We Were Spacemen podcast.
Mm.
And they have lots of guests from the past on that. At the cinema, we've got Arco on March the 12th dropping, which is a 2025 animated science fantasy film.
Yes.
Co-produced and directed by Ugo Bienvenu, who co-wrote it with Felix DeGivry. And it's set in 2073, where a boy wearing a rainbow cloak falls from the sky and from the future.
Oh.
Yeah, which actually has the voices of Alma Jodorowsky. Yes, Alejandro is her grandfather. And Mark Ruffalo and Natalie Portman and Andy Samberg.
Busy, hasn't he?
Yeah. Will Ferrell too.
Could be fun.
Yeah. It's actually getting a lot of good press out there, basically. Mm, it's one of those sort of crossover French animations which work quite well, in my opinion. There's also a horror comedy called Cold Storage coming out March 12th.
Joe Keery of Stranger Things, of course, is, yeah, I'm curious to see what that movie is going to be like.
It's sort of a Last of Us kind of sort of Romero-esque horror movie set in an abandoned military base, of course, abandoned by Liam Neeson and also Vanessa Redgrave has a part in it too. Wow.
I also have a bit of casting news as well. I saw just in the news that we've got a couple of bits of some new projects that have been developed and they've now started casting some of the lead roles. One of them is Paramount is working on an adaptation of the novel Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, which we did cover on the show. Really fantastic book. It's about two indie game developers sort of across their life as they create games, but there's also sort of drama between them in the friendship and as they move through life, and it talks a little bit about the game industry and being up and coming in that area. So it's Gabrielle Zevin's best-selling novel, and yes, they're going to be turning that into a movie, and it's going to be directed and written by Sian Hader, who did the movie Coda, and Daisy Edgar Jones is going to be starring as the Sadie role in that. So now they've just got to cast Sam. So I am intrigued to see who they will cast as Sam. Maybe a Hudson Williams could be good. But so I thought that was quite interesting, and I'll be keeping eyes on that. They've got to do a good job on that because that is a very beloved book. And if they mess it up, me and many other people will be quite mad.
Everyone has to have a Sam.
Yeah.
There's a Sam in Lord of the Rings and a Sam in Star Trek Starfleet Academy, Sam in Sliders.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, gosh, Sliders. I thought about that for ages. The other piece of casting news was they are Amazon Prime is working on a live-action adaptation of the game Life is Strange, which is one of my favorite games. I loved the first one. I had mixed feelings about the kind of follow-up that they did recently that carries on Max's story from the first game. But regardless, they've cast Max. Tatum Grace Hopkins will be playing Max's role, but I'm much, much more interested in who they've cast as Chloe, which is the actress Maisie Stella, who we saw in Mild Ass and who I think is perfect for the role of Chloe. And I loved the movie Mild Ass and I love Maisie Stella. So very keen to see what they do with that Life is Strange adaptation. I think it is rife for a great adaptation. There's a lot of action that happens. I hope they do sort of pull it out into a longer form thing because there's a lot of content to cover. Yeah. But, yeah, very excited that there's some movement being made on that and I'm very happy with the casting. So, yeah.
Also at the cinema, Project Hail Mary, of course, comes out this month on the 19th. Based on the 2021 Andy Weir novel. He also, of course, wrote the original novel, The Martian.
Have you read Project Hail Mary?
Yes.
Yeah, I read it over Christmas and I loved it. I liked it more than The Martian.
I didn't catch up with it until quite late last year and reviewed it on the show.
Oh, I mustn't have been here for that. Oh, well, yes, because I read it also in preparation for the film and really enjoyed it.
Mm.
So we'll see how Ryan Gosling goes trying to portray himself as a high school teacher.
Yeah.
Hardest acting role to date.
They've made some changes to the story, but Drew Goddard, I trust his authorial hands, screenwriting hands on this.
And Phil Lord and Chris Miller are a pretty firm set of hands for this kind of genre action comedy. I think they'll hit all the right notes because the book leans quite into the comedy elements.
Now, I first ran into their films with Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs back in 2009. I was really impressed by that movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the sequel, though. And the Lego movie, of course, in 2014.
Yeah.
So, but they have been working on the Spider-Verse animated franchises.
Yeah. I definitely think they have the right vibe for something like this because I don't want someone to go and make it too much hard science fiction. There's a lot of fun and energy in the book that we want to see in the movie. It's meant to be fun. So.
Well, they did that Last Man on Earth TV series and that was fun. In a sense. Okay, so we've also got the season 5 of For All Mankind on Apple TV, which starts on the 27th. Alternate universe Apollo space program that continued and resulted in a permanent colony on Mars, asteroid mining and manned exploration into the outer solar system by 2012. And that's just had they're doing a time jump in that. They jumped a decade from the last season. There's also a spin-off in the works too called Star City, which is about the Soviet side of all of this. Oh, it's a really great show. It's by Ronald Moore. It's got a Deep Space Nine, Star Trek kind of feel to parts of it. And I enjoyed it a lot. We also have a track here that I'd like to riff off the fact that, the last two of those items are basically space sort of stuff. And this is actually from Melbourne's own Basement Spaceman. And it's called Everything is Beautiful. And this is a tribute to the spacewalk of astronaut Ron Evans back in 1972. And, it's got some relevant commentary about today's world as well. It's going to be available on Friday the 13th of February digitally. And there's a tour involved with it. And Basement has been doing audio-visual tours, shall I say. So it's like, the music and also video montages and so on. Mm-hmm. And the first one is in Melbourne on Saturday the 14th of March. But, I think we actually have a card about that too, so I'll leave it to that. But for now we'll go with Basement Spaceman, Everything is Beautiful.
Ow! Hey, space buddies! I'm Danny John Jules. I play the cat on Red Dwarf. And I gotta tell you that listening to Zero G is fashionable as wearing knee-length socks with thongs. Zero G, industrial strength sci-fi pum-pum on 3RRR.
We did hear a track there from Basement Spaceman. I've seen too much 30 Rock. I want to say Spaceman. But it is, of course, Basement Spaceman. Everything is Beautiful. And that is from their album, which will be coming out on the 13th of March. And the album's called Apollo 17, 3 Days on the Moon. And as you heard there in that little announcement, they'll be doing tour dates. And one of them is in Melbourne, Saturday, 14th of March at the Wesleyan. And you can see their show, which is also called Apollo 17, 3 Days on the Moon. And that was in honour of the mention of some really good Spaceman content that we have coming up soon on the big and small screen.
I didn't know. I was today old when I found out that there were 5 mice that went to the moon. Well, okay, only 4 survived the actual trip to the moon. And the mice were in a little module inside the command module that orbited the moon, you know, that stays in orbit.
Oh, yeah.
Lunar module lands on it. And they actually spent, along with astronaut Evans, the longest amount of time spent in lunar orbit.
Wow. The most
lunar orbits completed. There were 5 mice called Fee, Fi, Fo, and Fum, and Fooey.
Oh.
And, you know, they were there to test the effects of cosmic rays upon biological material.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear, if that's not a Marvel comic origin story,
yeah.
The super mice. Really,
Teenage Mutant Ninja Mice.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, so, you've got a book, Megan.
Yes, so it's been a while since I've covered a book, but I thought I wanted to chat about this one because it is so firmly in my wheelhouse that I just had to share it for others who have similar interests to me. It's called How to Kill a Guy in 10 Dates. It's by an Australian author called Shaylee Thompson. It is her debut novel, and it is published by Atria, which is sort of an imprint of Simon & Schuster.
Mm-hmm.
The title is, of course, a kind of spin on the rom-com, Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey rom-com, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. I had to rethink that. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. But this book, How to Kill a Guy in 10 Dates, uses that kind of spin to merge the two genres of horror and rom-com. So the premise here is that the novel itself mixes those genres and it's a horror slash rom-com, borrowing and subverting tropes from both film genres. So sort of really taking it from the cinema genre here and centering a very self-aware and culturally referential cinemaphile as our leading lady. So it's got a really pacey plot. It's basically like reading a movie and it just putters along just like a horror film would, but does also include plot beats from the rom-com genre as well as some healthy lashings of cultural references, name drops, Easter eggs, and a lot of meta commentary. So it's definitely for your pop culture fans out there. And specifically, I'd say a lot of the references really spoke to me and so sort of my generation as well. So a lot of the movies that are spoken about are kind of your classic rom-coms of the like 90s, 2000s era, and same sort of for the horror, we're really talking your horror slasher classics, things like Halloween, Scream, and so on. All right, let's dig into a little bit about what the premise of the novel is. So the 10 dates of the title refer to a speed dating event that our heroine, Jamie Prescott, so you'll right away pick up on some nods there. So Jamie is attending this event with her best friend, Laurie. And so here at this speed dating event, 10 men and 10 women, the queer speed dating event is next Tuesday, will each have 10 minutes to get to know each other. So their interests, fears, desires, and so on before they move on to the next date. So fairly typical fare for your speed dating. 10 minutes to capture the attention of someone, and then you kind of hustled on quite quickly in very short amount of time to sort of use your gut instincts to see whether someone will be a match for you. So this event's conveniently taking place inside an otherwise empty multi-story bar and nightclub. I mean, alarm bells ringing right away. And so this sort of space has been cleared out for the event. So it's just this speed dating event that's taking place in this large space. And there's espresso martinis aplenty, lots of chatter. And once they sort of all sit down and start commencing, you know, their dates, it doesn't take very long for Jamie to hone in on 2 potential suitors that catch her eye. So we have the dashing and intense Wes, with his top button unbuttoned to show just a little bit of chest. But we also have the sweet and charming John, who channels late 80s Bill Pullman, and that's practically a quote. And so that is when I was like, okay, this book is definitely for me because I'm all about a late 80s Bill Pullman. And so John, you know, he's a bit more foppish. He's got his hair falling on his forehead. He's a little bit more rumpled. So we've sort of got the two different sides of the coin here of two pathways Jamie could go in terms of who she might woo. But not all men are created equal, and for every man who would stand in the rain for you or write you a letter every day for a year, there's one or more who will come on too strong, who'll say, you know, something gross and who won't take a hint. And so halfway through the event, just as Jamie is kind of giving a dressing down to her latest date who sort of made a bad, you know, made some bad moves on her, the lights suddenly cut out. And then when they come on, well, her date's throat has been slashed and the exits are locked and soon even more bodies start to pile up.
I'm wondering if she's the killer, but don't tell me, but...
Yeah, suspicious eyebrow has been raised, Rob. So Thompson does flesh out her descriptions of the characters by referencing the likes of like a Julia Roberts, a Meg Ryan, Sandra Bullock. And the whole book itself is peppered with these references to both horror films, so slashers, namely things like Halloween, Scream, I Know We Did Last Summer, and also iconic rom-coms as well. So things like While You Were Sleeping, which is my favourite rom-com, When Harry Met Sally, Notting Hill, etc., etc. But she also really cleverly crafts this quite fun and engaging locked room mystery plot, which, as I mentioned before, moves along at a clipping pace as though you're reading through a slasher movie itself. And, you know, we follow these characters as they lose their way, they find each other, they group, they regroup, they split up, they explore this kind of... how do I say this word? Labyrinthian nightclub?
Yeah, labyrinthian.
Labyrinthian nightclub that has all these countless dark corners and uncharted nooks and crannies. So we kind of follow them as they explore the space, trying to figure out what's going on, who's left, who's managed to escape, and trying to dodge, you know, they stumble upon an increasing amount of dead speed daters, so people who've attended this event who sadly not, you know, managed to escape, and trying to stay one step ahead of our masked killer.
That's interesting. I like the labyrinthian aspect of it. That sounds like a fun escape room sort of thing.
There's like a little map in the front of the book so you can sort of see what the layout is. And the other thing too is Jamie, our main character, she has to use her knowledge of the rules of a horror movie, very, you know, very well known.
She's a movie buff.
She's a movie buff, to help this kind of mishmash group of people survive. So, you know, she has to share with them what the rules are. You know, always hide for longer than you think. You've got to find a weapon. Don't split up. Watch your back. Don't say things like "I'll be right back." So she's kind of using her knowledge, and it's in this way the book also itself gets a bit meta to try to guide them through this scenario. And it's self-accepted that Jamie has a knowledge of what to do here, because the events that are unfolding do seem to be playing by the book of these tropes. You know, whoever's doing this also is a buff who knows how these things generally tend to go in films. So the other thing is too, of course, we have the other aspect of it, which I found really interesting, was it's also Jamie's knowledge of the rom-com genre that unexpectedly kind of comes in handy, because it starts to seem as though the knight is also playing by the rules of a romance and the killer may want someone to not just be their final girl but also their leading lady as
So the two tropes will meet.
Yes, exactly. Mm. They merge, they meld, etc. So I thought this was a really, really fun book. Someone had recommended it to me. As soon as they stumbled across a reference to Bill Pullman, they knew I should read this book. And, of course, you know, slasher horror is my favourite genre of horror, and I love a good rom-com as well. So right away I was really – and I got, like, the references and the tidbits that are kind of peppered through here are made for me. Like, I picked up on – all of the little nods and the little references. And it's not just things like naming your characters after iconic horror icons. There's mentions of kind of lines from movies or quotes from movies with no explanation, or like sort of throwaway mention of a scene of a famous rom-com that isn't explained. And, you know, it's up to you, the reader. Like, I knew what all those references were, and that made it really, really fun for me. And like I said, they're all kind of references of my millennial era. And, yeah, overall, too, it was really well plotted. I thought that it was well written and engaging, and I wanted to know sort of what the conclusion would be, even though I was having a lot of fun kind of speculating, and I sort of started to pick up the clues that the book was putting out for me. Definitely drops breadcrumbs, and if you are, and then it makes you feel good, like if you're attuned to these tropes and you've watched a lot of these films, I was like, oh, I know what's going on and I know exactly where she's going with this, and that was quite intentional. So it was like reading a movie in the best way. And I definitely think, I mean, what a debut novel, amazing stuff. And I really enjoyed it. How to Kill a Guy in 10 Dates by the author Shaylee Thompson. You can recognize it by its very fun cover with pink and red. And yeah, it's having a lot of fun. Like there's comedy in here too, of course, like it really leans into the comedy aspect too. It's intended for you to have fun with these tropes and enjoy the way she's melded two unlikely genres together in, I think, a really masterful way.
If only someone were filming these escapades.
I also think on that note that this is really ready to be adapted into a film. Like I would love to, I would watch this film for sure. So yeah, definitely recommend that book. It's only just come out, so you will be able to find it pretty easily. Most bookstores, your library, etc. And if it sounds up your alley, I say do it. But keep your eyes on your back as you go up that alley.
I've only recently rejoined a library because mostly I've been relying upon my own ginormous stash.
The home library.
But it's so much fun. Yeah. I mean, apart from the fact that they have that Canopy movie and television show
that you can access archive with your library access. Card. Yeah.
But, you know, you just walk in and you just, I was going to say borrow a book, but you can order books in from the other libraries and they'll ship them in like, and they'll be there like there overnight.
Yeah, it's amazing. I use my e-reader, like I use Libby to borrow books as well, e-books, which is really great. And sometimes it's nice to practice a little bit of patience too, you know, if you're second in line for the book, and it just means that it's a nice way to do it rather than just sort of going on impulse all the time.
And actually entirely relevant, which is why, of course, I mentioned it, to the next thing under discussion, but we've got a track first.
Yes, let's lead out of our horror sort of little segment there with a classic. I think there were two films that were strongly kind of referenced in the book, being Scream and Halloween, not just through the character name. So I thought we'd just hear a little bit of the iconic Halloween theme. Mm-hmm. John Carpenter, of course, and this one is from sort of the newer Halloween film. So it's also got some composing in there by Cody Carpenter and Daniel Davey. So this is the Halloween theme.
Hi there, I'm Jen Soska.
And I'm Sylvia Soska.
And we're the Twisted Twins, and you're listening to Zero G on 3RRFM.
Did you love it?
Was it good for you too?
Heck yeah.
That was, of course, Halloween theme by John Carpenter, Cody Carpenter, and Daniel Davies from one of the more recent Halloween films. But that little riff is just iconic. So that was because we had a bit of a chat about How to Kill a Guy in 10 Dates, the book that I just read by Shaylee Thompson, and highly recommend for horror and rom-com fans alike.
John Carpenter, the musical equivalent in horror of Philip Glass. Thank you for your book report, Megan.
Of course.
Okie dokie. Been watching too much Fallout. I was feeling a bit overwhelmed or perhaps underwhelmed by the world and some of its more puny humans on the weekend, as I'm sure many Triple R listeners are at the moment. Ah, what a world. I wanted a break from it all, so I decided that it might be a good time to catch up with some early Studio Ghibli films, one of which I haven't watched in decades and the other which I've never actually seen before. A shameful neglect of a masterpiece, which I have now corrected. It was 1995 at the cinema. Toy Story, Die Hard with a Vengeance, Apollo 13.
Wow.
GoldenEye, Batman Forever.
What a year.
Seven.
Ooh.
Waterworld, Jumanji, and Doctor Who had its telly movie out, and Star Trek Voyager debuted on the telly. Aeon Flux was on MTV.
What a time.
And so to the film, Whisper of the Heart. Not Whiskers of the Heart, which I initially...
Is what you were searching for.
Searching for. And I was led to this film by that process that I was speaking before, but also I felt like I'd been on a train and a cat sat down next to me and just...
Fate intervened.
Yeah. Because I was actually looking for another film called Whiskers. I knew this was the film to watch right now as the rating came up on it. Mild Impact.
That's all I'm ready for right now. Mild Impact only, thanks.
All I was up for. Where do you get it? Well, I saw it on Netflix, but you could rent or buy it on Prime, YouTube, or Fetch. It's a bit harder to find on disc. Well, only as hard as going to the internet. DVD/Blu-ray, individual film, or part of an assorted Studio Ghibli collection. I did see it available as a Blu-ray on the Crunchyroll store because they're into all things anime. Anyway, I watched it on Netty, which is only slightly more convenient than putting a disc into a player, but there you go. And I did actually watch the English dub for this one because I was intrigued by the cast. Okay, 1995 Japanese animated coming-of-age drama directed by Yoshifumi Kondo, a Japanese animator who was working for Studio Ghibli. In the late 1970s, he co-authored a textbook for beginning animators called The Animation Book. He worked as an animation director on Sherlock Hound, Anne of Green Gables, Kiki's Delivery Service, Only Yesterday and Princess Mononoke, as well as Porco Rosso and Pompoko.
Mm.
Now, Kondo was a rising light at Studio Ghibli, thought of as an eventual successor to the great Hayao Miyazaki and also the also great Isao Takahata. But alas, Whisper of the Heart was Kondo's only film as a director before he died.
Oh, that's quite sad.
At age 47 of an aneurysm.
Mm.
Very sad. A tragic loss. And so Whisper of the Heart was written by Hayao Miyazaki, based on Ao Hiragagi's 1989 manga. And she is now in her 60s and is an anime manga artist best known for Whisper and, of course, the film and that spun off it, and also The Cat Returns as well. And she had a lot of manga for about two decades back in the day. And the two cats from the film, the films have appeared in at least five Ghibli productions.
I can see, I'm surprised that you haven't seen it before now, but yeah. I can also see exactly how this spoke to you in the right moment. It came to you at the right time in your life.
Well, I knew this as one of the, when I thought of, stopped and thought about it, I knew it as one of the less fantastical Ghibli films.
Yes, a little more slice of life, I think.
Yeah, so yeah. I hadn't experienced it because I've been busy with, you know, Howls and Porco Rosso. okay, so 14-year-old Shizuku Tsukishima is a slightly disorganized 14-year-old student.
Is there any other kind?
At Tokyo's Mukahara Junior High School. And she's just on the cusp of turning it, going to the the senior high school. I think that, I don't know exactly what they call it. She lives with her parents. Her dad's a librarian and her mother is working on a master's thesis.
Mm-hmm.
Her big sister is also studying and working as well. They live in a very crowded upper floor apartment crammed with books and papers. Like,
oh, sounds great.
It is really grand.
Oh, cozy.
And, you know, she's about to start senior high with her best friend, Yuko Harada, and Shizuku is immensely keen on reading books and creative writing as well. And the latter manifests in her playfully rewriting the lyrics to John Denver's Country Road song, which features in the plot line. And I swear...
I love that song.
I swear when I heard, and it was Olivia Newton-John's rendition at the start of the show, given the circumstances of the world at the moment, I felt like I was actually coming home. Going back, because Ghibli movies mean a lot to me from back in the day.
Yeah.
Anyway, she idly notices the checkout cards, I don't remember those, in the back of several of her library books, show that they were checked out by one Seiji Amasawa, who, being a mystery, naturally becomes the subject of Shizuku's curiosity and a bit of a sort of a fantasy crush.
I sense an adventure is afoot.
Exactly. Simultaneously, she's teased by a fellow schoolgoer who we shall dub Rude Boy.
Oh, Rude Boy. What's his problem?
That's just in my head that he functioned as a, you know, he's a bit sarcastic to her.
Well, still.
Still, yes. Then she has a strange encounter with a cat that boards her school commute train and sits next to her.
Well, there's that whimsy that we know and love.
Leading her on an adventure to an exotic antique store.
Okay.
Where she finds a statuette of a cat known as the Baron and thereby hangs the tail.
Mm.
So she's actually quite drawn to this whole thing, the idea of there being an actual physical location where... there are lots of strange artifacts, a strange elderly grandfather type who takes him.
My favourite type.
Under his
wing. Yes, a mentor, an older mentor.
Yeah, and you know this is all just.
Yeah, it's cozy. It's cozy. Yeah, that's exactly what we need right now.
So, elements of this that appeal to me: country roads.
Mm-hmm. Tick.
The details, the observation, and I mean artistically.
Yes.
The observation of the mundanes. There are the Easter eggs, like there's a stuffed Kiki's delivery service doll.
Nice.
Moths around a porch light. The folds rendered on a motorcycle cover parked outside the apartment.
I mean, we know they're top tier in the animation sense.
Oh, yeah. A Ghibli blimp flies over at one stage. And I feel like I actually attended a Japanese high school. The layout seems so familiar to me from so many things.
Yeah.
The town feels real. Yeah. Although there's way less zombies and trainee mecha pilots than I seem to
than you've come to expect, yeah.
And the romances are basically schoolyard crushes. They don't swamp Shizuku's main pash, which is being a creative writer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Her determination to achieve that has the same level of driving force that other Ghibli heroines exhibit.
Yep.
And there's so many echoes of past and future Ghibli movies, looking back in hindsight.
Mm.
Her relationship with her family is amusing and mildly frustrating from her point of view, obviously less so for me. A big sister who tries to keep her on track. Father and mother are extremely busy with their own things.
Yeah.
And, of course, to Shizuku, her things are the most important things in the world.
Of course, she's a 14-year-old girl.
Yeah. Look, they actually are funny, the parents. They seem to be curiously uninterested in where their daughter's whereabouts are.
It was the 90s, Rob. It was really a different time.
They walk a different path in Japan, perhaps. She has to shoulder chores at home. Mm. So, you know, oh. And her goal is to read 20 books in the summer.
Oh gosh. This sounds lovely, truly.
Well, you know, as a bibliophile myself, I felt a bit of resonance going on there. And she awkwardly tries to help out with her girlfriend's crush, which just goes horribly wrong.
I love the stakes level that we're talking here too. Like, I think that's the,
And it's all creatively resonant, you know.
Yeah, like still moving, still touching, but it's.
The antique shop's grandson is a violin maker, or aspiring violin maker.
Wow.
What is the word for that? Luthner, something like that.
Yeah.
And there's a wee but stunning bit of eye-popping fantasy aviation as she writes her story and we see that realised in her imagination.
Mm.
So there's a fantasy element. I love this film. I just sat there and I just drank it in. And it's not as much of a fantasy story or a science fiction one as Ghibli normally delivers.
Yes.
But it felt like that and it was just wonderful to watch.
It still has that sense of whimsy and delight, but it's just on a more everyday level.
Mm. It's Whisper of the Heart from 1995. Mm. I just give it a high. It's just a great movie, a masterpiece, really.
Yeah.
Okay,
so let's hear some music from
it. Let's hear the track that almost made me weep. And this is the version of Country Road that appeared in the film. And as I said, it does inform the plot several times throughout the movie. It is called John Denver's original song. Mm-hmm. And this is Yoko Hana doing the version, which is just sweet.
Broadcast mode. This is Crichton, the service android aboard the Starship Zero-G on 3RRR FM. SOS! SOS! Mayday! Help! I am being held captive by rogue makeup artists who want to cover my face in plaster and latex rubber. Panic mode. Get me the hell out of here!
We just heard Yoko Hana's take on John Denver's classic Take Me Home, Country Roads. That was the violin version that appeared in Whisper of the Heart, which stole your heart, Rob, over the weekend. You've got a glow behind your eyes that you didn't have last week. And I get it. I think a good Ghibli film, I mean, for a start, is always a win. But sometimes it's really nice to watch like a cozy, everyday stakes.
Mm-hmm.
Very whimsical and comforting animation. So,
and actually quite remarkable that I'd never seen it before.
I truly,
I'm so lucky.
It came to you at the right time. I'll stick by that. You know, like you really needed that boost.
I did.
And it's a shame that I mean, do you feel maybe that the lack of the supernatural or that kind of thing is maybe meant it wasn't as kind of latched onto in the West, perhaps?
Yes, in my circles.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, true.
it's an acknowledged classic.
Mm. Yes, and not too late to catch up with it. It's on Netflix, you said.
Yeah. Amazing. Amongst other places.
But
So, of course, I had to follow it up with one I had seen.
Of course.
Which is The Cat Returns, which is about the further adventures of the Baron, the dapper cat statue. Mm-hmm. It's not really a sequel, but it is a kind of a spin-off.
Yeah.
2002, directed by Hiroyuki Morita. And, this is Hiroyuki Morita's first and only film, again, as director for Studio Ghibli. An animator and director with an enormous back catalogue of stuff, which I don't need to go into here, but, you know, like Akira and other Ghibli movies, or just so many Ghost in the Shell. Move on from that. okay, so again, this is about a high school student, Haru Yoshioka. You can almost swap her for Shizuku Whisper of the Heart.
Yeah.
She's running late for school, of course.
Of course.
she saves a cat carrying a package in its mouth from being hit by a truck on a street. The cat dusts itself off, picks itself off, stands up on its hind legs and thanks her.
Oh, unexpected. Expected in Ghibli terms, to be fair. Run of the mill.
The cat is actually Loon, Prince of the Cat Kingdom.
Of course he is.
And so his father, the Cat King, showers Haru with unwanted gifts. you know, mice, catnip.
Oh, it's classic cat behaviour.
Hordes of pursuing cats, all the sorts of things that would really mortify a high school student if they happened to happen in the locker room. she's also been given the gift of the Prince Poor in marriage.
Oh.
Which is a startling development.
Okay.
She wants to get out of that. A voice tells her she needs to seek help from the Cat Bureau.
Because, it's always layers of bureaucracy with these things.
Yeah, to escape the embarrassment of catitude that she's experiencing. And so the adventure begins. She will meet the Baron, the gallant, swashbuckling, dapper cat from the first movie, from Whisper of the Heart.
Yep.
Muta the cat, again from the first movie, the perpetually cynical and ever hungry but streetwise cat. With one coloured ear, and Toto the Raven, the Fremeny of Muta. And the cast, the voice cast, I mean, the Japanese cast is astounding as well. But I happened to, again, watch this, the voice dub. We've got Anne Hathaway playing the mum.
Oh.
Carrie Ewells is the Baron, of course.
Of course.
You just hear the dread pirate Robert and his swashbuckling. Peter Boyle from Everybody Loves Raymond, but before that, Young Frankenstein plays the voice of Muta the Cat. Elliot Gould is Toto the Raven. And Tim Curry is the Cat King.
Fabulous.
But
that's great.
You would like to know this. The best friend, Hitomo, is played by Kristen Bell.
Oh,
the voice at least. And, you know, it's like, oh, my God, this is a great film.
Yeah.
actually, I should have – no, I won't go there. Once again, the school so well realised, the town.
Yeah.
And this one, because this is a full-on fantasy film, The Cat Kingdom.
Well, yes.
Just seeing the cat parade through the streets of Tokyo earlier on, it's just an amazing thing. Oh. So, yeah, once again, totally charmed by a Studio Ghibli film. This one I have seen before quite a long time ago, actually, so it was good to revisit it. So, yeah, look, if you really just want to take a break from the real world at the moment.
Yeah, get cozy.
With certain Ghibli movies. Don't watch Graveyard of the Fireflies.
Grave of the Fireflies, maybe give that a miss.
Give that a miss. Even Howl's Moving Castle has got a big war theme in it. So
it does, yeah. This one sounds good, Whisper of the Heart and The Cat Returns. Bit of Spirited Away maybe in there.
Yeah, Spirited Away would be a good one.
Would be a good one.
Take time out with. Porco Rosso is sort of... war adjacent, but you know, it's more sky pirates.
More of a thematic situation there.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, this is why I'm going to be going deep on Pokemon Pocopia, the new game on Switch 2. That's going to be my cozy comfort over the next few weeks. But yeah, I think Ghibli's a nice time to turn to some familiar animes.
Oh, yeah, that's what I want to mention. One of the voices, I think it was Whisper of the Heart, Or was it the other one? Or The Cat Returns. Anyway, might be The Cat Returns, actually. But the mum is Kristen Sutherland. Joyce.
Oh, Buffy.
Yeah, and you hear it in her voice.
Yeah.
Once again, cursed with a difficult daughter.
She can never escape.
Did I say difficult? I shouldn't use that
headstrong, word. Headstrong. Headstrong. How dare you, Rob?
Okay. All right, we'll go with two tracks here. I'll Write a Story, Yuji Nomi. It's the artist here, Whisper of the Heart, original soundtrack. And then we'll swap into The Cat King's Parade, again by Nomi. Did both of those for The Cat Returns soundtrack. And that's about it for Zero G.
Yes, we do have Holly Alexander coming up, filling in for Astral Glamour. And thank you, Rob. And I think, yes, let's spend the next week kind of seeking out things that bring us a bit of comfort, bit of joy, bit of whimsy.
And try not to overfeed your cat because Moon, the cat in the Ghibli films, could do with a bit of...
You never... Yes, yes.
Yes. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Rob.
G'day, this is Rob Jan. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Triple R's Zero G, a weekly radio show exploring science fiction, fantasy and historical. Zero G is broadcast live on Triple R from Melbourne, Australia every Monday. Hope you enjoy the podcast and feel free to get in touch with us via our Facebook page or the Triple R website.